This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And we are live, and this is Brooke Spector in The Deep Dive. And we're sorry about the technical problems that bewitched us for the first few minutes. So we're catching up now. And it is a real pleasure to call upon the services, the thoughts, the ideas, the analysis of an old friend, Yaki Sillier, he was really the founder of the Institute for Security Studies back in 1990, in the midst of South Africa's tumultuous period of change and an effort to get a grip on how things should move forward in less than conflict-ridden terms. Over the years, he's broadened out his interests to global and especially African futures. And there are a lot of studies that he has been engaged with, modeling for alternative African futures, depending on the inputs, war, peace, economic growth, or the lack of it, and so forth. And today, I want to call upon his skills and knowledge and judgment to help us unpack the crisis in Rwanda and the eastern reaches of the Congo and M23, the rebel group. Rwanda, let alone the eastern Congo, is probably a place that most South Africans and certainly most people in the world outside of Rwanda and eastern Congo would have a little trouble putting their finger on a map and saying, aha, that's where it is. And if they did, they'd still be a little puzzled as to figuring out why they should pay attention to this. But of course, it's been in the news now, and many South Africans have discovered to their puzzlement that they have an army or an army detachment in that area itself in eastern Congo. And there's all manner of crisis going on between the rebels and the engagement of the Rwanda government, perhaps, and the way in which South Africa's engaged in it. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, note how the rest of the world is desperate to get a hold of the eastern Congo for interesting reasons. But I'm going to let Yaki dissect all of this and set it out for us in a way we can all understand. And it's a pleasure to have you. Now, please explain to me why anybody here should pay attention to Rwanda, why there should be a South African military contingent there, what it's fighting for, and why has this spilled over into the Congo, and why is Rwanda involved? And why is there a war of words, in fact, between the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, and South Africa's president in recent days? What's going on? Please help.
Brooks, let's cast our minds back to Thabo Mbeki and the well-known Sun City talks on the Congo. That's a long, long time ago that you and I will remember, because it created a lot of interest. I make that historical reference only to underline the point that South Africa, from the time of Mobutu Sese Seko, has been involved in trying to bring peace to the DR Congo. Then it was still called Zaire, if I'm not mistaken. So for decades, literally 2.5 decades after that, South Africa has been engaged. Now, we all remember there was the first and the second Congo War that brought Kabila to power senior. He was succeeded by his son. You may remember that called the DR Congo, was invaded by Rwanda. That second invasion was an actual fact. That was after Paul Kagame had taken power in Rwanda, was in actual fact stopped by the Zimbabweans. SADC intervened to basically halt the advance of the Rwandan armed forces onto Kinshasa. I make that historical reference Because already you will notice that there is engagement by Rwanda, there was engagement by South Africa. We have poured hundreds of millions of dollars, not rand, into trying to bring peaceful elections and a capable government. The United Nations have been involved through various peacekeeping missions, which at one point were the largest peacekeeping missions in the world, MONUC. That had, I can't remember the exact number, but more than 20,000 troops deployed in the Congo. Eventually across the whole country, but initially, oh, sorry, but eventually focusing on the eastern part, North Kivu, South Kivu, the parts of the eastern Congo. Remember, we're talking of a country that's 2,000 kilometers broad, wide from west to east. It's the size of Western Europe. Without roads. It's got a massive river in it. Large parts of it are forest, but the eastern part, North Kivu, South Kivu, is located next to Uganda, Rwanda, and the economies of that region is intimately intertwined. So let's think back in 1994, when this all started. Remember that there was a genocide in Rwanda. What had happened is that the Hutus started killing Tutsis. Paul Kagame put together a resistance movement that overthrew the Hutu government. The Hutus fled into the eastern part of the DR Congo, in other words, westward, out from Rwanda. And there they formed the FDLR, the Genocidaires. Now, they still to this day constitute a threat to the government of Rwanda. Because remember, Rwanda is governed by, let's call it the Tutsi minority government, headed by Paul Kagame, who overthrew a majority Hutu government. Hutus constitute 80% of the population of Rwanda. The Hutus who had done the genocide, many of them fled. Westward into the DRC, and they are ready and prepared, want to come back and overthrow Kagame. That's the root of the political security problem in the Eastern DRC.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second so that we can do a quick ad break and station identification. Otherwise, ICASA will be really, really angry with us. But we want our audience members to hear these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
It's the bane of my existence. Now we're live. Okay, we're back with Yaki Sillier, and we're of the founder of ISS, the Institute for Security Studies, and still a major figure within its larger picture, and as he studies security issues for Africa and beyond. But today we're looking at the problem of Rwanda and the Eastern Congo, and most especially why South Africa has a military force there and why people are getting killed. You've set a background, the political and historical background, for why there is fighting between the various militias and as a result of some genocidal actions in Rwanda a generation and a half ago, really. But what is it that people are fighting over so viciously and vigorously in the Eastern Congo, and why is South Africa there?
Okay, so the first point that I made in my introductory remarks is to sketch out the fact that the Rwandan government is concerned that Hutu Rwandans that had fled westward into the DR Congo presents an existential threat to the government of Paul Kagame. The second point is, after this happened and over time, the economies of the Eastern DRC and Rwanda are inextricably linked. Largely, this is an extremely rich region of coltan and other essential minerals that we use in every iPhone and other. And I read the figure that I think there's something like $140 million of wealth that goes to Rwanda every year from the exploitation of resources in the Eastern DRC. This has become a massive operation. Remember that this is not a region where there's a clear border and a division of responsibility between Rwanda and the DR Congo. The DR Congo, the eastern part of the DR Congo, largely is ungoverned. The authority of the government in Kinshasa, 1,700 kilometers away to the west, doesn't exist. So it's a wild west. And in this wild west, particularly eventually Rwandans and apparently the Rwandan government have now developed vested interests. So there are two interests for Rwanda in the eastern Congo. The one is security. It's serious. They are concerned that the Hutus are going to come back and overthrow Kagame's government because he doesn't exactly run a democratic system, but a very successful country. The second is that they have over time developed vested economic interests, and those interests are vast. And they are, as I said, in every cell phone literally that we use, to the extent that Apple has recently been accused, and that every Apple iPhone has got some blood mineral in it from the Eastern DRC. So this is widespread. So,
That would apply to every cell phone in the world, pretty much. I
yes.
mean, whether it's Huawei or a Samsung
Yeah.
or Nokia doesn't make them anymore, but all the other companies that do,
Yeah.
it's the same little bit of valuable material that's been poked
Yeah.
into it to make the connections and the semiconductors.
Yeah. So the second question you ask is why is South Africa involved? And I started and made the point that remember Thabo Mbeki, Sun City, lots of engagement to try and deal with the transition from Mobutu to eventually Kabila, Kabila's son, and eventually Tshisekedi. South Africa has poured, as I've said, hundreds of millions of dollars into this. We have provided troops, initially as the UN, eventually as the Force Intervention Brigade, then now as part of MONUSCO, and today also as part of what is known as SADC DRC, or SADC, the SADC mission in the DRC. Because none of these have been able to stabilize the eastern part of the DRC. And why? Because there's no governance. Remember the size of this country that we spoke about, and the fact that its economy is linked to Uganda and Rwanda. Its economy and society is not linked to Kinshasa, 1,700 kilometers to the west. So Kinshasa, Tshisekedi is desperately trying to establish some degree of control over this rich, mineral-rich territory in the east. And he finds himself in competition with Rwanda and Uganda, who are much closer, who have vested interests there, and an informal and a criminal economy that runs things. So over time, South Africa was drawn in, and there's this big fight between President Tshisekedi in Kinshasa, the chair president of the DRC, and President Paul Kagame in Rwanda. And they are at odds with one another. To the extent that, so Tshisekedi has first got the UN involved, then he got East Africa involved, now he's got SADC involved. Each one of them providing a peacekeeping mission to try and bring stability to the eastern part of the DRC. And South Africa has been involved in all of this, except, of course, for the East African peacekeeping force, because we're part of Southern Africa. And this issue has just gone from bad to worse. So SADC is now deployed with a SADC mission, but a relatively small mission, which is trying to do what a much larger UN mission tried to do a decade ago, with obviously limited means and capacity. And this has now all come unstuck because the M20. So let's talk a little bit about the M23. So remember that I told the story of the Hutus being driven out of the DRC after the genocide, and Paul Kagame and the Tutsis governing Rwanda. Now, there is also a Tutsi community in the eastern part of the DRC, and Rwanda has instrumentalized the Tutsis in the eastern DRC as the M23. This is their force that sort of serves to provide them with in-depth, with forward protection, and looks after the interests of the Tutsi. And the M23, which is supported and armed by Rwanda, is now advancing and basically looking after Rwanda's security and economic interests in the Eastern DRC.
I remember a photograph in the news 7, 8 years ago that basically showed what seemed to be an indescribable number of people fleeing from one or another military depredation in there, moving as fast as they could on foot. Those were people in the Eastern Congo leaving or getting out of the way of M23, or were they fleeing from yet somebody else?
They're fleeing, they fear the M23, they fear the FARDC, which is the federal armed force, the armed forces of the DR Congo. And the only people that have provided a degree of security for them is the peacekeepers. But they are caught in the middle. So it's a, and remember, we, you know, you mentioned the figure of, I think the figure is 2 million displaced people. So you've got a, now you've got a small little peacekeeping force. I think South Africa's got 1,800 troops there. And you've got just an IDP population of 2 million people in, and it's, you know, it's forests and it's hills and it's mission impossible for South Africa. So South Africa has now been caught up basically in the fight. So let me go back a step. There was a UN peacekeepers who tried to bring peace. But Kabila and his successor Tshisekedi, the president of the DR Congo, has felt increasingly that the problem is Rwanda and the M23, and he has increasingly pushed for a more assertive and aggressive force that can sort out these rebels. And that led to a mandate for the SADC force that is there, that in actual fact is a fighting force that supports the armed forces of the DR Congo to oust the M23. And because the M23 is an instrument of Rwandan foreign policy and Rwanda's forward defense in depth, this then places them in direct competition with Rwanda.
That explains why Cyril Ramaphosa and Paul Kagame have been engaged in a spitting match for the last couple of days.
Yeah, because South Africa is part of SADC. We are seen in support of the government of the DR Congo, of Tshisekedi, who is fighting Rwanda. And it's basically become a little bit of a proxy war. And of course, Paul Kagame is, Rwanda is like Sparta. In the old Greek mythology, this muscular, prickly porcupine that doesn't take nonsense from anybody and really looks after their interests and is asserting they've taken an approach of forward defense to protect their government, to protect their also their economic interests. And then the South Africans are now, as part of the SADC forces, now seen as threatening this. So it's not a problem that can be resolved easily, because at the root of the problem is an absence of governance in the Eastern DR Congo.
At the root of the problem is A, an absence of government, but B, something valuable to fight over.
Yes, because it's rich, and as you were pointing out, and that is and it's become apparently quite a vital part of the Rwandan economy and to a degree that of Uganda.
Now, I keep hearing conspiracy theory, rumor, wink, wink, nudge, nudge kinds of things, that this is all the fault of mysterious Western powers who want this fight so they can continue to exploit the coltan deposits through Paul Kagame and his bully boys. Is there truth to this, or is this just nightmares?
Well, South Africans, and particularly in the South African government, love conspiracies. And particularly if there's a Western country or a Western company behind this, then, it's great. I think there is a degree of the reality. There are commercial interests behind this. There's a market. It's not like Apple or anybody is going in and say, we want the resources in the Eastern DRC. They're interested in coltan. They don't mind where it comes from. And I think that there are middlemen and middlemen who buy and launder the stuff, and it's sold on the market, and through various ways it ends up in our telephones, in our iPhones, or whatever the case may be. So I think it's a complicated story. And yeah, I
We're
see
going
you
to take
have to break.
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back just after that. This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooks Spector, your host, and today I'm delighted to have Yaki Cellier associated with the Institute for Security Studies and its founder, in fact, and he is busy dissecting for us all the different elements that are involved in Rwanda, M23, the Eastern Congo, and the snit fight between Cyril Ramaphosa and Paul Kagame, as well as the fact that everybody wants a chunk of that rock that happens to be found on the ground there, coltan. Coltan is in your phone, it's in your computer, it's probably now in the chip that runs your toaster. So it's an integral part of everybody's life. But we'll be right back after this.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
Okay, we are back. This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooks Spector, and my guest today, Yaki Cellier, Institute of Security Studies, co-found, well, founder of it, and it was born out of the need to have rational voices in the early 1990s in this country to get through some of the underbrush of chaos and conflict. But Yaki has spread his wings and now deals with the issues of security and strategic questions much more widely, and the future, Africa's Future Project. But today we're talking about Rwanda, Paul Kagame, Cyril Ramaphosa, M23, the Eastern Congo, and coltan, and why all of this is now this tremendous Gordian knot. From what you've said, Yaki, I'm conjuring up this wonderful action film in which there is all of this fighting going on, all of this conflict, all of these wonderful actors, and you know, the other side of the picture, of course, is those 12-year-olds digging in the ground to obtain the coltan that everybody else wants a share of. And then, surprisingly, there is the discovery of massive deposits of it in country X, let's say, for the sake of argument, Greenland. And then a whole different story begins to evolve. Is this the only place in the world where this stuff is found, or is it simply the only place that it's easily accessible and has been well mapped and analyzed?
I think it's the place where it's the cheapest because it's informal, it's informal mining. This is not big mining companies with big infrastructure that have to do environmental studies and blah, blah, blah. This is poor people digging it out by hand in extremely dangerous circumstances and selling it for the bare minimum that then goes up the chain. And eventually it's just, I think, just the cheapest place. And of course, Africa has got lots of these minerals. And they are mined in Africa because the regulatory regimes are much lower. North America, Europe, China also have all of these minerals, but they don't mind it because they're concerned about the environmental impact. That is not the case in Africa. So it's unfortunately a matter of that's where that's where it is available the cheapest, and it's also serves all kind of interests as we've been discussing.
So now, the origins then for the most recent flare-up of the presidents of Rwanda and South Africa, the basis of this is that Paul Kagame thinks that the South Africans are no longer in a peacekeeping role, but they are defenders, if you will, of the Congolese government's position, even though the forces are really very badly supplied and very small on the ground, given the needs. And at the same time, there is a growing criticism that South Africa's forces are not well supplied, there have been casualties because of the lack of those supplies or the lack of concern by the officials who are supposed to manage all that. Where are we in all this?
Well, it's in a sense all of the above.
Wonderful.
It is the fact that the SANDF is woefully under-resourced and has been for more than a decade and doesn't have the ability to provide support, logistic or fire support to its troops. And our troops have equipment that breaks, that cannot be repaired. We cannot supply them from South Africa, and we don't have enough troops. And we are overstretched. We have, you know, if there's a problem with illegal miners, Zamazamas, we deploy the SANDF. If the sewerage pumps break, we deploy the SANDF. If Zuma decides to destroy the country and have riots, we deploy the SANDF. If there's violence in northern Mozambique, insurgency, we deploy the SANDF. And we've cut their budget year after year. It's, I think, now 0.75% of GDP. Also, poor leadership, bad management. And we don't want to make decisions in the sense that if we need to sort of say, this is what we want the military for, A, B, and C, and we are going to fund that and stop with all the bans and golf days and all the other things that we use and the pretense that we somehow have a military for conventional defense. Our military is there for emergency functions internally and regionally, which includes peacekeeping, and we must just prepare and train and equip them for that, and we have to increase the budget. So all of this is now sort of come out in the wash. And of course, what we need, if we then go from the SANDF to to zoom out a little bit, we need a clear exit strategy. You cannot deploy, we've been involved in the DR Congo, I think it's 22 years now. What is our exit strategy? It is the primary responsibility of the government in Kinshasa to run their country. Yes, we can support and provide them, but there is only so much that South Africa can do. And we are back to where we were, 14 years ago. So I think there are many issues that come together. We haven't spoken about the quality of leadership, political and otherwise, of the Department of Defense. And its structure, there are many issues with regard to that. In the same instance that the DRC has poor governance, we also have poor governance of a different type. So I think that all has come together in the DR Congo.
I mean, when you describe the lack of leadership, but a sort of an overarching plan, but no detail, no page two to the plan. It suddenly reminds me of I think it's George Foreman, the boxer, who said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah. And South Africa now just got punched in the mouth. And I don't think this issue will not escalate. We're not going to go to war. But, you know, President Kagame is a prickly guy. His government is reported to have sent assassination squads into South Africa and elsewhere. To deal with opponents. He's not somebody who takes these things lightly, and he really has taken a very aggressive approach to what's happening in the Eastern DR Congo. I think eventually people will talk. There's the so-called Nairobi peace process. There is the Luanda peace process. Everybody's talking to everybody. And there's a summit there was a summit of the East African community yesterday, and there's a summit of the SA SADC, I think, tomorrow. So everybody's going to talk. We'll calm this all down. There will be no resolution of the Eastern DR Congo because it's a problem of governance. It's a problem of development or the lack thereof. This is something that, takes time. It takes economic development, it takes planning and investment by capable leadership.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember what seems like a million years ago, it was really only 4 or 5 years ago, that Paul Kagame's Rwanda was held up as a shining light of progressive development plans and management for a smallish African country. There were missions that went to Rwanda to look at how it was being done, how it was being implemented, how it was being carried out. In fact, People used to study it as an example of good management, even if they left out the next chapter, which talked about democratic values and politics. But they spoke to, and then they would come back with these reports. And the first page always talked about Kigali as a beautifully clean city, well maintained, no litter on the streets. The traffic control was working. There were no beggars. I mean, it was like the antonym to all of Africa's other woes and disasters.
No, yeah, and you're entirely correct, and everybody has been sucked into that that narrative. And by all indications, Rwanda has done very well under Paul Kagame. But in the same way that the wheels came off in Ethiopia when Meles Zenawi died, what happens when Paul Kagame is no longer there? I am almost prepared to guarantee that there will be problems because you have a long-standing authoritarian leader who has provided leadership and vision to his country, and the country has done very well. But once you establish that there is a void below him, and once he goes, steps down, I think we're looking for trouble because then all these issues that I refer to boil up. The fact that Rwanda isn't really, that it's an authoritarian dictatorship that has been able to enable development through authoritarian means. But once you take your foot off that, off the throat, or whatever the analogies you want to use,
That's good enough.
all kinds of problems are going to emerge. So I think that the story, the bright story of Rwanda, may eventually, not be that bright, in the longer term. And that's where, of course, where democracy has an advantage in providing a regular turnover of leadership, and provides an opportunity for renewal. And that, I think Rwanda is eventually going to run out of time.
We have to take a final ad break. Commercial messages, station identification. As we used to say 100 million years ago in radio, don't touch that dial. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
We're back with our final minutes. I am your host, Brooke Spector. This is the Deep Dive, and my guest today, Yaki Sylier, founder of the ISS, but now he looks at broader problems than just South Africa, Africa's future. And today we've been talking about the problem that is taking place in the Eastern Congo, in which Rwanda is intimately engaged, as well as the fact that South Africa has military forces there. They're difficult to maintain and supply, and there's something of a snit fight going on between Cyril Ramaphosa and Paul Kagame, the respective presidents of the two countries. Yaki, where do we go from here? I'll give you 2 minutes, and then we'll have to say goodbye. How do we get out of this mess?
I think the first thing is just to cool down temperatures and expectations, between South Africa, SADC, and Kagame and the East African community. And there's a lot of diplomatic forward and backward that's happening. And then I think it's probably time for the SADC forces, for South Africa to withdraw. We don't have the means to support what is happening in the Eastern DRC. And I think that the government of in Kinshasa need to relook the engagement of the United Nations to provide a degree of stability in the Eastern Congo. I think those are the immediate steps. The long-term solution of this, there needs to be a discussion on the nature of sharing of resources, security concerns in the eastern part of the DRC. That addresses the legitimate security challenges, concerns that Rwanda has. And that's going to take a bit of time and ingenuity by diplomats everywhere.
And it's going to take energy and enthusiasm, and it's also going to take a lot of patience on the part of the participants to all this. And the people on the ground will continue to have their difficulties as a result of it. And that's unfortunate, But that's the reality of the thing. This is Brooke Spector of The Deep Dive, and we have been talking with Yaki Sellier, a frequent guest. We'll say goodbye to him, and thanks again for helping to open up the curtain so that we can understand what in the world is happening up there and why in the world we are engaged in it.